Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 32. My name is Tom Cagley, and together we'll explore the varied worlds of software process improvement and measurement on the Spamcast. The cast will cover topics that deal with the challenges of how work is done in information technology organizations as they grow and evolve. The show will combine commentaries, interviews, your feedback to serve up ideas, opinions, options, advice, and even occasionally facts. In a nutshell, the cast provides advice for and from practitioners, methodologists, pundits, and consultants. The interview in this cast is part two of my discussion with Murali Chematuri. You might think part two is just more of the same, but think again. Murali has laid out some interesting theories and data. For every comment Spamcast gets on Murali's interview, Murali has authorized me to send the commenter a copy, a PDF copy of Murali's new book on estimation, which I will review in a future Spamcast. The essay for this cast is an excerpt from When Good Numbers Go Bad, titled When Communication Makes Good Numbers Go Bad. As usual, we'll conclude with information on upcoming conferences, comments from listeners, and notes on upcoming casts. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-61111. Program that number into your cell phone. Call early and often. Email addresses, Twitter IDs can be found in the show notes. Some disclaimers during the interviews. The views expressed by my interviewees are theirs and theirs alone, no matter how wonderful they are. The views and opinions expressed by me are mine and do not represent those of my employers or other third parties. However, if you'd like to borrow my views and opinions, I am always happy to share with a little attribution. The essay for Spamcast 32 is an excerpt from When Good Numbers Go Bad by Thomas M. Cagley Jr. The text of the essay can be found at www.tcagley.wordpress.com. Comments and corrections are welcome. When communication makes good numbers go bad. One of the most tragic errors young metrics programs can make can be classified as the field of dreams syndrome. Measure it and they will find it useful. The issues that this type of thinking causes are typically recognized first as communication or training problems. Questions surface such as, why isn't everyone using our measures? Or, why isn't anyone interested? Dashboards and reports are created, but no one cares. At least two problems are generally present, insular vision and lack of validation. Monologues. Late night television is the home of monologue. Jay Leno, David Letterman use monologues to make us laugh. Their only feedback is the laugh track in many cases. The unidirectional flow of the information is an important feature of a monologue. Late night comedy and metrics presentations really should have little similarity. Albeit, a bit of levity is probably a good thing. Most metrics reports and presentations are approached as if they were monologues rather than dialogues. The monologue approach occurs for a number of reasons. The first is the confusion of the volume and value attribute. Metrics programs need to show value, and the two attributes of volume and value are sometimes confused. Recall the old bromides like, the more the merrier. When these concepts are confused, it seems that the goal of a metrics presentation seems to be to show every bit of data ever collected, crammed into charts or slides, and then to tell anyone who will listen the perception of what they mean. Also known as death by slides, focusing on volume chokes the ability to hold a dialogue. It should be noted that volume and quality are unrelated attributes, An old adage states, a designer has achieved perfection not when there is nothing left to add, but when there is nothing left to be taken away. And if you don't believe that, read all or any of Edward Tufte's books on design. By the way, good approach for anyone who has slides or is presenting information. Design your presentation with the aim of evoking action by the recipient. Simplicity and minimalism are concepts that need to be used when designing your presentation tool. Show pictures, but have all the data. Once you have a tool to aid your communication, the next step is to use the tool to facilitate a dialogue as the basis for creating an understanding. Bidirectional flow. A dialogue, defined as the exchange of information and understanding, provides a platform for the metrics team to affect the behavior of the organization and to absorb information about how work is done. Wikis and blogs are means of creating this type of dialogue. Another idea to combat monologue is to recognize that presentations and handouts are not the same thing. Presentations are structures to create dialogue. Handouts are one-way vehicles or monologues. Beliefs. Beliefs act as a powerful filter that can promote communication problems. Deep-seated beliefs force the believer into a difficult position when it comes to challenging the status quo. When change occurs without the ability to challenge, it leads to confusion and possibly conflict. This is a scenario where good numbers go bad. Beliefs do not have to be based on mathematical or scientific fact, but can be driven by common understandings of how things work, which may or may not be correct. Once upon a time, most people believed the world was flat. This constrained their behavior. As an example, I was recently exposed to a senior executive who firmly believed that education and training were not related to improved capability of his organization. If acted upon, the outcome of this belief will potentially be lower productivity, lower innovation, lower capability, and potentially the need to outsource. The workforce would not stay current or gain new skills, creating a downward spiral. I certainly wish I could have asked whether the executive thought it was important for his children to be educated and whether that education would impact their future capability. Facts and the relationship between facts can and are bridged by beliefs. Metrics professionals must continually create awareness so that everyone in the metrics equation keeps an open and questioning mind to extract the full value from numbers. Just plain wrong. One of the final classes of communication errors occurs when the information gleaned from a chart, graph, or single number is published by the metrics team and it's wrong. In my mind, the most frightening words are, my interpretation of this graph is the earth is flat. Misinterpretation can be caused by a number of problems, ranging from education and the knowledge of the interpreter, active misinterpretation, or the act of spreading misinformation, or the belief thing in the last section. Regardless of why the interpretation is wrong, the damage is done. As soon as the misinterpretation is perceived, the metrics program will be viewed as non-neutral and potentially biased. When measurement drives activity based on misinterpretation, the results can be erroneous business decisions with lasting implications. However, when the reason for the error is perceived to be caused by misinterpretation, a bad taste is left in people's mouth for a long period of time. Zombie hypothesis. One of the worst errors made by humans is not publicly recognizing a mistake and trying to tough it out. The affliction can be encapsulated by the phrase, throwing good money after bad. When applied in metrics programs, this affliction can lead to scarcity of funds for metrics and SPI investment opportunities. Not facing up to your mistakes causes a scenario where good numbers go bad. The cost and effort needed to gather, analyze, report, and react to measures being collected will eclipse the value derived if you're living a lie. The zombie hypothesis is a variant of the law of crappy process, which implies that the worst and most incorrect data will become the de facto standards, real or perceived, for your measurement program. When a problem is found, recognize it, fix the process, then the definitions, and re-implement the measurement. The effectiveness and efficiency of the measurement program will be improved. More importantly, you will inhabit the moral high ground of knowing you are measuring the right thing in the right way. This has been an excerpt from When Good Numbers Go Bad by Thomas M. Cagley Jr. Comments and feedback are welcome. There are a number of ways to share your thoughts. Email Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. You can leave voice messages at 1-206-888-6111. You can reach me on Twitter. My Twitter ID is tcagley. It's my intent to share all emails and voice messages. The interview on Spamcast 29 is with Murali Chimaturi. This is part two of our two-part interview on estimation. A summary of Murali's CV includes over 34 years of total experience, out of which 14 years was in information technology, having worked with Tata for 5.5 years and Electronics Corporation of India for 19.5 years. He's also worked for Satyam, Metamore, and Vistatari Business. He's also the chief consultant of Chimaturi Consulting. Professional memberships include a fellow of the Indian Institution of Industrial Engineering, senior member of the Computer Society of India, member of the All India Management Association, and the member of the IEEE, and hopefully sometime in the future, a member of the International Function Point Users Group. Murali's CV continues with a long list of publications, including a soon-to-be-released book on estimation. We will review that on a future Spamcast. I estimate you'll be enthralled. A couple of quick reminders before we start the interview. The first half of the interview was on Spamcast 29. I suggest that if you haven't listened to that interview, please go back and listen to that first. Secondly, Murali has kindly offered that for every comment that Spamcast gets based on this interview, Murali has authorized me to send you a PDF copy of his new book on estimation. Comments can be made to the voicemail line or to spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Now back to the interview. Adherents of agile methodologies would argue that you don't know enough early in the project, that we are as a discipline very poor or very bad at getting requirements, which would then allow us to size. How do you react when people say, well, I can't do an estimate?
You know, Tom, you are saying in your own question, the answer is embedded. They are estimating for the next 30 days. And after 30 days, they are estimating for the next 30 days. You know, they are doing work in short sprints. And for each sprint, they are estimating. Maybe they don't want to estimate for the entire project, but they are estimating for the next iteration. So estimation is built in. There also, you know, there are two techniques that are being used by agile people. One is this feature point estimation and the other is story point estimation. They're estimating. But the estimation is limited to the sprint. You know, think about it. Put yourself in the position of the person who is footing the bill and paying the money for development. Would you like to go ahead and give sanction saying that, you know, I do not know how much it costs, but I can tell you for the next 30 days it will cost so much. And what it will cost for the next 30 days, I will give you after 30 days. Would any person sanction money like that?
Not on something large.
Yeah, that's where. You know, if you are in Agile, if you are taking small projects, if the customer is sitting, that is co-located, and the members of the team are experts and experienced, you know, these are three conditions put for Agile. And large projects certainly is not advisable to go for Agile methodology. So I think estimation is important, Tom.
Are there other attributes that you would think are highly important to getting an accurate estimate? Things like, you know, we talked about domain knowledge, we talked a little bit about skill. Are there other attributes that drive productivity?
Yeah, you know, the productivity is specific and unique to it, a specific working environment and also the processes. Now, the process of working, how we develop our products, what sort of quality assurance activities we use, what is the sort of instructions that we give to the programmers? Do we give a design document? Do we give a use case? Do we give a scenario? You know, do we give a DFD diagram and program specs? All these matter. So that is why productivity is always specific to the organization and the environment in which it is working. So processes are important, how we develop. The process can make a development work more efficient or less efficient. The environment, the supervision, and also the knowledge about the productivity figure, and also having assistance to the from the past experience, the corporate memory, how well it is organized. From that, can we take the advantage? Do we have reusable code library? You know, all these matters are important for productivity, and all these factors in existence matters for estimation. One thing I would advocate for anybody is have a corporate memory, that is knowledge repository, which is organized well and is available to the estimators and project managers. That will go a long way in having proper estimates and also proper execution.
If you could impart one bit of advice to an estimator, what would that be?
Tom, I have two pieces, not one.
Oh, no, not two.
You know, first thing is, we have been estimating in a deterministic manner, not probabilistic manner. I little elaborate on that, you know, if somebody says how much time do you consume for developing a screen of average complexity, we are coming out with one figure, that is 2 days, 3 days. You know, the right answer would be, you know, the best case scenario, I develop it in 2 days. In the worst case scenario, I develop it in 4 days. And in normal case scenario, I will develop it in 3 days. You get my point? This is probabilistic. Deterministic approach is we give one figure. In probabilistic estimate, we give two or three. We give a range. You know, developing an average screen takes 2 to 4 days with a normalcy of 3 days. That is the approach I would like these estimators to take. They are taking deterministic estimate, and as far as I have seen, most of the people there who take probabilistic approach, but they do not take. Many people do not even know that the most popular project management tool, MS Project, allows this probabilistic estimation. Second bit of advice, which is promised, do not use one productivity figure to arrive at effort from size. Let us say a project we have estimated will have a size of 1,000 function point. Now, we give one figure, 10 hours per function point, and say 10,000 hours for this project. I would like the people to give 4 productivity figures, if not more. One, requirements analysis. If I have to carry out requirements analysis for a project of size 1,000 function point, what is my productivity? Second, software design. What is my productivity and effort required to design a project of size 1,000 function points? Now, third, I would like to have a productivity figure for construction, that is programming and unit testing. How much time do I need, or how much effort should I have to put in to construct a project of size 1,000 function points? And fourth, how much time or effort I need to put in to test a project of the size 1,000 function points. Now, as you can see, the productivity of requirements analysis, the software design, the construction and testing differ. All cannot be put into one figure and estimate. Now, in certain projects, requirements analysis may consume 30% of the time. In some other projects, the requirements analysis may consist only 10% of the time. Similarly, software design, similarly construction, similarly testing. Now, it differs from project to project, the amount of effort we have to spend. So what I am suggesting to the estimators is, don't use one productivity figure to convert size to effort, but based on your project, divide into 3, 4, 5, whatever are the main activities, give a productivity figure for each of them to arrive at the effort. That way, you will have proper, accurate, as accurate as possible with the minimum variance from the actual will be possible. This is the suggestions I would give to the estimators, Tom.
You wake up tomorrow morning and you find within your power the ability to fix any two problems within the software development world. What would they be and why?
Okay. First and foremost, as I suggested, I would like to bring in a cost accountant and industrial engineer to the software development industry to do the costing and the industrial engineering study. Industrial engineering study, basically they were called originally work study engineers. They had two disciplines in work study. One is method study and the second is work measurement. Is the method that we are following in our organization the right method? Are there any inefficiencies in it? Can we improve upon it? Can we simplify the work? I would like an industrial engineer to come in and study my organization and improve upon it. Cost accountant to make us know what are our costs, where they are going, how we can reduce the cost or increase the efficiency. Do a value engineering kind of study with these two specialists. Second, I would like to bring in some of the discipline that is commonplace in manufacturing. You know, in manufacturing, everything goes according to a plan, according to a drawing. And without a drawing, if I give to the workshop and say, manufacture this, he will say, come with a drawing. And if I simply go back with a drawing, he will say, where is the process plan? You know, these disciplines are slightly not up to my liking or not on par with manufacturing. I would like to bring in that. And the last one, the software engineer does everything in the software industry. The programmer also does the systems analysis. The programmer also does the design. Programmer also does estimation. The programmer also does costing. The programmer also does testing. This is anathema in manufacturing. The person who manufactures cannot test it. The tester is independent. The discipline of independent verification and validation, IV and V, has been coming, but I think I need to improve upon that. These are the three aspects that I would like to improve in the software development industry, Tom.
Murali, this has been a fantastic interview. Where would people find out more about you, what you're doing, and be able to contact you?
Tom, you know, I have my website, www.chemuturi.com, chemuturi.com. And I can be reached on my mail ID, Murali, Murali, at the rate. Chemuturi, chemuturi.com. I will be available on this website, and the website, my phone numbers are there, and my mail ID is there. I have phone number of US through VoIP, and also my Indian numbers, and I have my email ID, and the products, the services that I render, everything is available there. I promise to answer any mail that comes to me.
All of that contact information will be
also in the show notes so that people can reference that offline. Murali, this has been wonderful. As you know, as part of appearing here, one of the things that I provide is a platform for my interviewees to promote either their company or something that they're doing. Please feel free at this point to give us a wide open, unabashed promotion for anything that you would like.
Yeah, I have developed a software tool called PM PAL. PM stands for Project Management. It is a tool that assists the organizations to really measure their efficiency as well as manage the projects very well. And that PM PAL comes with the modules of software estimation. I have put in a full-fledged software estimation tool in a collaborative manner. It uses function points, use case points, object points, FPA Mark II, COCOMO, lines of code, and also shows the ISBSG matrix. And this comes with all facets of software estimation, namely the size estimation, second, development effort estimation, third, development cost estimation, and fourth, development schedule estimation. Now, this is coupled with the work breakdown structure module, wherein we allocate work and track it to completion, and a defect manager module, whereby all the defects that are unearthed are recorded and tracked to closure. And the third module that we have is change manager module, which helps the organizations to track the change requests placed on the project to completion. And along with this, we have a timesheet module. A timesheet captures the time spent by the resources on various activities, and that provides the data for metrics. You know, we give productivity metrics, defect metrics, schedule metrics, effort metrics, change metrics, and so many varieties of metrics that will be adequate for an organization attempting to go for CMMI level 5. In my estimation module, we have two unique features. One, we have a task-based estimation where for part life cycle projects, maintenance projects, where it is not possible to estimate the size, it can be accomplished with this, which comes with the 300 predefined activities and can be used for ERP implementation, systems and network administration projects, quality management projects, organization development projects, and of course, software development projects. We have also, the PM PAL is the only tool to have test points estimation. Test points estimation and task-based estimation are available only in our tool. Nowhere else are they available. And also, this estimation module is the only one which provides for all the four aspects, namely the size, the effort, the cost, and schedule. I would like all the people to download a demo which is available on my site, which is fully functional for 30 calendar days that can be downloaded from our website. And I request people to take a look at it and use it. We have clients across the world for it. We have clients in Singapore. We have clients in the United States. And needless to say, we have clients in India. I would like that product, Estimator PAL. And of course, we have two smaller products, FPA PAL, dedicated purely to function point analysis and counting, and UCP PAL, use case point estimation and counting. Thank you, Tom. This is what I would like to say.
Thank you very much. And I suspect with the little bit of reading I've done so far that we might want to chat about software sizing units in the future.
Definitely, Tom. I'll be very glad to share it with you.
This segment of Spamcast features appearances, presentations, news, and comments. I have another webinar coming up in May. The webinar is titled A Cost-Effective Approach to Enterprise-Wide Software Process Improvement. It's on May 22, 2008, from 10 o'clock a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. More information and registration information can be found at www.itmpi.org/webinars. The conference season is beginning. I will be speaking at IFPUG's third annual ISMA conference and fall workshops. Those workshops run from Sunday, September 14th through the conference, which ends on Friday, September 19th, 2008 at the Westin Arlington Gateway Hotel. Information can be found at www.ifpug.org. The presentation follows on my meme of counting weird things on the web. This one is titled Counting Facebook and will be on Friday, September 19th from 10:25 a.m. to 11:25 a.m. Hey, you get to be president of IFPUG, you get to go last, right? I'm also speaking at Quest Toronto 2008 conference, September 22nd through 26th, 2008, at the Hilton Hotel in Toronto, Canada. Toronto is one of my favorite cities, by the way. If you're up there, we'll go to Say What and have a wonderful beer. I will be presenting Good Numbers Go Bad on Wednesday, September 24th from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. and also joining in as a subject matter expert in the End of Day Solutions Workshop. Information can be found at www.qaiquest.org/Toronto. Finally, I'll be speaking at the Northeast Quality Council 57th Conference. The conference is scheduled for October 14th through 15th, 2008 in Marlborough, Massachusetts at the Best Western Royal Plaza. The presentation is titled One Size Fits Someone Other Than Me. Information can be found at www.neqc.org/conferences. All URLs are obviously going to be in the show notes. The next Spamcast will feature the second part of my interview with Rob Donlin of QPMG, covering a wide range of measurement and process improvement topics. Like Murali's interview, part two is pretty darn cool. Someone recently asked me why I just don't edit the interviews down to 15 minutes. Crazy talk, I say. It's amazing what is being shared on Spamcast. I'm learning from the whole interview. Why shouldn't I share the whole thing? We'll start another multi-parter with Phil Armour in a few weeks. Your thoughts and comments are always a welcome addition. And as a matter of fact, we have a thought. We got a note from Paul. Tom, I'm learning things, period. Spamcast is making my life better. Thanks for Spamcast 31, Paul. Remember, all Spamcast episodes are available. If you have issues downloading any one of them, let me know. I'll help you through that. Contact Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-6111. It's my intent to share all emails, voice messages, Twitters. The Spamcast blog and show notes can be found at www.spamcast.net. One final request. I'm still looking for reviews on iTunes or on Podcast Alley. Please help me out with a review. I would certainly be appreciative. The Spamcast blog and show notes can be found at www.spamcast.com. Your comments, questions, rants are appreciated and will help facilitate a dialogue and build a community. Let me know the topics you'd like to have covered and the people you'd like me to interview. Get involved. Final request. Recommend Spamcast to a friend or post a review on iTunes. The music on Spamcast is made available by the PodSafe Music Network at www.podshow.com. The featured song is by 2012 and is titled Last Battle. Information on the band can be found at www.myspace.com/2012vision.com. 2012 does an incredible job with experimental electronica. Be sure to support 2012 and all PodSafe artists. Spamcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 2.5 license. Remember, if process improvement is a never-ending journey,
why do so many people ask, when will we arrive? See y'all in 2 weeks. Thank you.